Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight we got Ian, Mark, and possibly Seth if he decides to grace us. We're going to talk about from 1985, Matthew Broderick in a Richard Donner film. A little bit thing called Lady Hawk, soundtrack by Alan Parsons. With a little Rutger Hauer, a little Michelle Pfeiffer, a little Rumpold.
And we need to clarify that's Lady Hawk with an E.
Hockey, yeah, like the band. Like the hipster band that just seems to exist now. We're gonna look up how many hipster bands named after 80s movies or 80s movie references there are. I'm pretty sure there's got to be a band named Truffle Shuffle at this point.
There has to be. It's just a universal.
It's a universal truthism.
Truthism.
Yes. So we're gonna start with Lady Hawk. Well, soundtrack by Alan Parsons. It's very
80s.
In parts it is, but it sort of turns it off in the middle, it seems.
Yeah, it's
like
more, there's definitely a traditional score mixed in.
And I don't know if that's him doing it. I mean, because some of the Alan Parsons stuff works for me. The really obnoxious 80s, like, high-end synth stuff, when, like, there's guys riding horses in a chase, doesn't work. But, like, some of the shots with, like, the sun and everything, they're a little more moody and a little more ambient.
In parts, it actually started reminding me of Neverending Story.
Yeah, it's definitely got, well, Neverending Story had a the score was done by the guy that does Passport, a German jazz guy or something. Some kind of more, maybe more modern jazz fusion sort of stuff, which is there a little bit, I guess, in Neverending Story. But yeah, this is definitely in that group of 80s fantasy sword and sorcery movies. Like, you know, we always talk about, you know, there's Neverending Story and Lady Hawk and Willow and
Legend,
and I mean, there's a lot of them that are of varying degrees of quality in terms of the story or the production value or everything. And this one, I'd say, is kind of on the low end of the spectrum from story and to a degree production value, though I think it's got some really pretty scenes. The scenery is good. We were trying to figure out.
It looked like it cost some money to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, the castle and stuff, some of the shots of the castle look real nice, and just the on-location shooting. It's all stuff that you just don't get anymore, and so there's a certain appreciation for that. That said, I feel like the movie has a not necessarily a weird pacing, but it's just like the structure. There are things that I'm left wanting on in the structure. The first 10 or 15 minutes are basically this character escaping, and you don't know why they care about him so much. He seems just like a petty little, like, pickpocket thief, and yet the main bad guy, this bishop, who apparently has the little community, the little town, the kingdom on under stranglehold. There's no king, there's no, like, hierarchy other than the bishop is the one in charge of these guys.
I don't think that was uncommon.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, you don't see a lot of it in those movies, though. Usually it's more like an evil king or an evil prince or something, so it is kind of dead.
Well, historically, the power kept shifting back and forth.
That's true.
That was the one. The one huge advantage the church had was there was a unity, whereas, you know, outside of, you know, great kings like Charlemagne, there really wasn't a lot of unity.
Yeah.
And the nobility, it was a bunch of warring counts and nobles.
Well, the bishop was apparently no longer on the good side of the church, according to Rumpold, who was the good priest that had formerly betrayed the Rutger Hauer king, king character. That
the bishop who was in league with Satan.
Apparently, I kept hoping Satan would show up, you know, like Clovenhoof and everything at the end, and then they'd have to fight him or something.
And he'd take the bishop back down with him.
Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. It'd be like in Ghost, the end, when that guy gets it from in the end of Ghost. No, so clearly this sort of tries to feature Matthew Broderick a lot. I don't know. It's almost, I mean, he's the first build character.
Well, I think he was coming off of War Games, so I think he was probably pretty hot.
He was definitely hot, and maybe they were trying to appeal to a young crowd of like, hey, check out the sword and sorcery movie with this laughy, fun-loving Matthew Broderick character. But really, he's like the third string sidekick character. So it's weird to kind of put him in the forefront at the beginning. and then put so much of the story on him. And then it kind of, I mean, the Rutger Hauer character kind of suffers for it, I think. And though you do get backstory, it's just sort of a lot of talking. It's Rumpold sitting there telling Matthew Broderick the whole backstory about how Michelle Pfeiffer and Rutger Hauer were in love, and then the bishop used Satan power, dark powers, to curse them so that, you know, she would be, they could never be together, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, so that bit of magical element is kind of cool, but they don't really do much more with it than that. There's not, like, other magic or anything going on in this story. It's kind of set in a semi-realistic world. I mean, even down to the sort of hack and grab, smash and very kind of mediocrely choreographed fight scenes, I feel. You know, it's a lot of just, like, probably how it really does look, you know?
The double crossbow was pretty cool.
Yeah, the double crossbow was definitely neat. He's got the double crossbow, and he makes good use of it a few times. You know, I think eventually you just see him sort of hit a guy with it when it's empty and drop it on the ground to move on to a new weapon. But, yeah, Richard Donner is doing a lot of 80s stuff with this. You know, you got the highlighting, and you got the dolly shots and the crane shots and stuff. And
I was definitely noticing that.
You know, it almost looks kind of like, you know, like a John McTiernan kind of thing almost. It's got kind of like a, it's just an 80s thing, I guess, you know? I mean, you know, George P. Cosmatos and stuff does the same thing in those 80s movies. And so it just feels like you're watching Die Hard, except it's set in that.
Rutger Hauer must have been pretty hot at that time also.
I don't know if he was ever that hot in the States. He always was sort of side character, even in this, not side characters, but sort of, he was rarely the top biller.
I was trying to think of Michelle Pfeiffer. I know she had done, 83 would have been Scarface.
Okay, yeah, well then, yeah, she was probably known and everything. This movie probably helped for her. I mean, she's good in it. She's hardly in it, really. I mean, she's in it for a bit. Maybe that's part of the problem, is it's sort of, the real heart of the movie is this kind of tragic love story between these two characters, but it's split with this sidekick sort of comedic relief in Matthew Broderick that doesn't really work very well.
How much of a romantic story can you have
if, like, they can never see each other, right?
Exactly.
And that's the probably why they made the Matthew Broderick character so big, is they're like, well, we just can't, this doesn't work. This love story about two people that really can't see each other. You know, this is before they came up with things like Message in a Bottle or whatever other romantic comedies, The Notebook and The Lake House and stuff, where you
I haven't seen any of those.
Time travel. Oh, I'm sure you will eventually.
Probably.
You'll have to.
Lord willing.
Yep.
I'll cross my fingers.
Find you a nice woman, and she'll set you down and make sure that you watch The Lake House and the boat show and Hitch and all those movies.
Fuck it.
Yeah. You gotta pay your dues, right?
Yeah, willingly.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, that's not too bad. Well, Lady Hawk's one you could throw in there. I'm sure it would make
a fine lady cry. I could see myself actually watching that again sometime.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I was telling Seth, I think it's been over 20 years since I've seen it. And yeah. I remember it was one of those movies that was recorded off HBO that I had on videotape, but just didn't watch it after a certain age. But I enjoyed it when I was a little kid. Hell, anything with swords and crossbows and
a little fighting, a little
shit
fun
like that. I remember being fascinated by the sword with the spikes in it.
Yeah, his Rutger Hauer's big sword.
The big sword.
They kind of bring back inexplicably. He tells him he doesn't have it, and then hides it, so that then they can have this big reveal and kind of this artificial, like, now you get the sword.
Well, they
you
didn't
need.
Really explain it, but I was assuming that part of it was to try to make him hesitate in his plans.
To kill the bishop. That's true. There's a lot lacking in this story where you almost feel like they cut parts out, maybe. And, I mean, we had a little problem with the DVD player not, you know, glitching out, but it didn't seem like it cut too much out of the actual story, as far as I could tell. Who knows? It says the movie is 121 minutes, but it didn't seem like it was 121 minutes, does it?
No, it didn't.
So I don't know if we lost 20 minutes there, or but the whole story, for the most part, still worked. It just felt a little lacking in places that I think were probably always lacking.
I could have used a little more Alfred Molina.
Yeah, a little more Alfred Molina before he gets trapped.
Yeah, that was...
Wolf Hunter.
Yeah, he has bad luck in movies.
Yeah, things don't generally work out for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess for me, I'm just left wondering, like, you know, this bishop has all this power, apparently, at the beginning, and he's got magic and whatnot, maybe, but...
Oh, he's got black magic.
Black magic, but it doesn't really amount to much in the end, because they just kind of sneak in and take him out. I mean, Wrecker Howard has to fight a couple of guards, but, like, four or five guards, it's sort of an underwhelming, kind of anticlimactic sort of conclusion to what... I mean, it's not an epic movie, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's big. It's got beautiful, you know, outside
No, there's not enough traveling for it to be an epic movie.
Well, and there's not enough, like, just plain, there's not enough sense of scale or
it's
something.
It's not an Ishtar.
Yeah, I guess not. I've never seen that. I've heard it was not good, but Lady Hawk is a tough one because it's one of those.
In my mind, it's sort of unique. There aren't a lot of movies I could group it with. And I could see it not being real popular in modern audiences, and I really don't know what it did at the time. It probably did mediocre.
Yeah, I can't really remember. Wasn't that great.
Not that it, you know, halted anybody's rise to fame. I think Matthew Broderick...
He hit a steady mediocrity for a while.
Well, no, he went on to...
Was Ferris Bueller after this?
Yeah, okay. Ferris Bueller was after that. And, of course, Michelle Pfeiffer hit it really big in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, yeah, she had Witches of Eastwick and...
Witches of Eastwick, among other Tequila things. Sunrise. What was that other? The Fabulous Baker Brothers.
Fabulous Baker Boys.
Yeah, that's...
And I want to say Married to the Mob. That was in there at some point.
That would have been... Yeah, with your favorite.
Well, Jonathan Demme was the director, but...
No, I'm pretty sure it had, what's his name from Quantum Leap?
Scott Bakula?
No.
Al? Oh! Al, yeah. Yeah, Al might have been in that. That's very likely. I wouldn't mind that. Little Al. Little Al will do ya. No, Lady Hawk is definitely unique, but
I think Married to the Mob had that chick in it that I always thought was super sexy. Kind of disappeared. What the hell? Randy something.
A woman named Randy?
Yeah, with an eye.
Oh, you put an eye at the end of it, and then you're okay. You're in the clear, apparently. I think, like Neverending Story, I feel like it sort of doesn't entirely work, but you could take what's there, and you could rework it, and I feel like it could be remade and be pretty good. But obviously, it would be different...
It's a great story. It just
Well, components of the story, yeah, definitely. The love story is interesting, and then how to.
It is the curse, of course. I was thinking you'd have to fit Alan Rickman in there somewhere.
Oh yeah, Alan Rickman would be good. the guy from The Crow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That guy would be good. They were both in Prince of Thieves, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Okay, that's what we're just basically... They should take Prince of Thieves and Lady Hawk and combine them and make take elements of both of those and do a remake where
it definitely has elements of Robin Hood in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the crossbow and just the...
Well, shit, they remade it again.
What did they remake?
I believe there's a new...
There's a new Robin Hood, yeah. Ridley Scott one with Russell Crowe with short hair looking like Gladiator, basically. I don't know what to make of it.
I haven't seen Gladiator since I saw it in the theater, and I really didn't.
Yeah, it's not that great either. Yeah, it's
had it had so much potential.
I know exactly, right?
And didn't it win Best Picture?
I think it was just like it was a low year, and he won Best Actor for that. When you know the year before he did The Insider, which is clearly a much better performance.
His performance in that was
cool. The Insider was really good, and Gladiator was just kind of whatever.
Russell Crowe. Yeah, I dig Russell Crowe. He definitely gets himself.
He gets into it, yeah.
Bad press.
Well, you throw enough phones at people and something's going to happen, you know.
But, yeah, his intensity definitely comes across.
Anyway, back to Lady Hawk. Finish Lady Hawk. Lady Hawk, I give a 2, and I just give it a 2. Honestly, it's not that great a movie.
Honestly, pure childhood nostalgia, I'm giving it a 3. It still resonates with me. And, you know, I'll admit it, I was a big Michelle Pfeiffer fan.
Oh, yeah. No, she's really nice in this movie.
She's very nice.
And you know, Rutger Hauer. I mean, there's a handful of pieces I like.
We still have to watch the best. And, you know, the biggest problem I had with, was it Split Second?
Yeah, with Rutger.
Rutger, you don't get to see his acting chops very often because the material he works with is shit.
Usually. I mean, he's good in Surviving the Game.
Exactly.
He is. He's good in Surviving. That's a good movie.
It's got
Rutger and Busey and F. Murray.
It's got
John C.
Where was there a reference to that, though?
And Ice-T.
F. Murray Abraham.
Was in Blood Monkey.
Blood Monkey. And, it had what's his fuck? The black guy.
Charles S. Dutton.
Yeah.
Rock himself. Went to prison for manslaughter. Then he was in Alien 3.
And,
That's it. Like, that's everybody. I named everybody. I named John C.
Yeah, probably.
I just didn't... I don't know who Denny was. Denny was the son of F. Murray. F. Murray's son, Denny.
You know, he looked familiar. He's been in some stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was in some other things.
Yeah, I can remember him.
But yeah, we want to watch Hitcher. That's what you want to talk about, right? As the big Howard chops.
He just, yeah, absolutely. His performance in that is just mesmerizing to me. I don't know why. And, it's just so intense and he's just so goddamn creepy. And it's just, it's a perfect portrayal of a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And it never gives any reason. That makes it that much more creepy. It's just this random guy, you know, picks on this kid and just decides to terrorize him.
Yep. He's bored. He's done for.
He's bored, but he is really, really good at it. I mean, the guy is a freaking walking dead zone. And it's just got a certain amount of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's, you know, it's not...
He teaches Jennifer Jason Leigh that no matter how hard things get, she's just got to keep on trucking.
That was the part. I mean, that was hardcore. I mean,
even whether she gets cable or not, she should keep on trucking.
Who comes up with this shit in the first place?
People like me, writers, Mark.
People that are
high-end screenwriters like myself.
You know, she's still available, I bet.
I'm sure. She could do parties and corporate events and things.
It's kind of weird. She popped up in Road to Perdition and... And yeah, she played Tom Hanks' wife, and then she kind of disappeared again.
It happens. I want to see those two Paul Newman detective movies again. Or actually, that's
another
thing.
Well, I think there were three. You know, I was kind of wondering about Twilight, and I was wondering if it was the same character.
Harper or whatever. That was the character's name.
Harper and Deadpool.
Well, not the Deadpool. It's just not called Deadpool.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my gosh!
I have them on VHS.
Oh man, we got to get those on the DVD.
Yeah, with Melanie Griffith, which was really weird because of Nobody's Fool.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Man, she was pretty hot when she was super young. I mean, this was like 70s.
Wow.
She must have been like 18 or something.
Uh-oh. Edge of the Galactic Ley Line there. Okay, so yeah, Lady Hawk, decent one. Got some nice scenes, got some nice stuff.
It's totally put it on
like a Saturday afternoon, like 2-3 o'clock in like the fall when the sun is starting to come down a little earlier.
If you go into this movie to critique it, it's, you know, you're going
to... Well, if you go into any movie to critique it, then you can do that.
No, there's some movies that are pretty infallible.
Yeah, but people still will, like, because everyone else loves them, they'll find things to be, you know, critical about. Not that technical. Who cares about making sense? It's criticism. You just have to contrive a way to make it make sense to you and to your select group or whatever. That's what a lot of criticism is. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Talk to Nikal and the boys over at N+1. That's what they're all about.
Is that...
That's some site that doesn't mean anything. Anyway, yeah. Lady Hawk, put it on a Saturday afternoon when you're, like, you know, cleaning your house or something. You can kind of pop in and out. It's got... scenes that go on a little too long where nothing that important happens, so you can kind of not focus on it. You don't have to just sit and watch it from the beginning to the end, I think, and you'll still get a feel of, okay, they're at the castle, and the kid escapes, and then he sees the guy, and then some stuff happens, and then he learns the thing, and then the bird gets shot with the arrow, and then he figures that out, and then there's some more, and there's a guy with a wolf trap, and then they're back at the castle, and then blah, blah, and then the movie ends. You know, it's like, that takes 2 hours or something, I guess, or an hour and a half, or however long, depending on whether your Blu-ray or DVD player decides to skip like mine. But yeah, it's a unique enough movie that's definitely worth checking out. If you're a big sword and sorcery person, you just got to get through it. You got to see it as part of your
I didn't realize it was
pedagogy. Yeah. No, I always felt like there was somebody that directed it, like that there was some kind of name. And so it made sense to me when I looked at the credits and said Richard Donner. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, take it easy, Futile Podcast viewers and listeners. And remember, you can go to iTunes and subscribe and rate us.
Where else are you going to find a conversation about Lady Hawk?
Probably like 17,000 other like nerd podcasts. And some of them will do it better because they will have gone to Wikipedia and read off the bullet points and they'll make it sound like they know the material. But we don't always do that, you know? We know you want to listen to the podcast to hear a review. But you know, there's a lot of our personality in it. There's a lot of our take on things in it. Coming from Humboldt, the Humboldt Nation, we represent that through and through. Mien, that's what we're all about.
No apathy?
Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's not apathy. It's something worse than that, I think. I don't even want to... Ugh. Humboldt Nation. Ugh. Anyway, take it easy and keep on trucking. I don't wanna stay here.